That is a wrap on the home schedule for Ohio State. And my, what a way to end it. A riveting 42-9 win over Rutgers on senior day. I don't know. That's overselling it just a touch. Welcome to Snap Judgments. That's Jeremy Birmingham. I am Austin Ward. It's a win. It's another blowout win. Doesn't seem like a lot of new injuries picked up. I know that just like the pregame keys, we'll be talking about the ones that already existed. But Ohio State just kind of went through the motions here to survive and advance and get through training camp 3.0 and move on to the game. And this, to me, Berm, is like the biggest test of my non-nitpicking strategy for this year on Snap Judgments. Yeah. Because, like, I don't know, in the first half, I kind of wanted to pull my hair out.
I mean, there's things you can certainly nitpick.
I know there are.
It's not like as much between the lines, though, today. I mean, yeah, there was some moments, but obviously when you go out here with your quarterback not having his top two, top three, top four, top five receivers for some reason all through the first half.
Yeah.
Bryson Rogers barely played in the first half. Mylon Graham did not play till the second. Ohio State was without Quincy Porter. Brandon Innes, who we talked about last week, and the size of the ice packs that were on his upper body last week. And then you see the hit he took here in the third quarter where he's being driven into the turf on the exact same shoulder. You're like, ah, man. And like, you know, Brandon, I know he's been kind of a favorite target of the online crowd this year, but he's super tough, man. And you know, Ryan Day was asked about him in postgame and said, hey, he's fine. Brandon's always going to be fine. Big day for Max Clair. A nice, easy day for Julian Sand. A lot of good reps for Lincoln Kienholz. And, you know, questions I have about some of them, like, I guess. But ultimately, you did what you had to do today. And if you mentioned it on the notebook, people will see that later, but like we went from preseason games against Rutgers or a scrimmage against Purdue to a preseason game against UCLA to like a spring game today. And it's the way it is. I think there's a lot of really positive things. I love where the running game is going. I thought it was interesting that Ohio State, when the backups were out there on the offensive line, Josh Padilla still was not out there. So clearly, even though he's back and was not on the injury report, he did not play. So yeah, there's just all these questions about how those things are being handled that I think, unfortunately, are overshadowing the performance that this team's had on the field, not just today, but this entire season. Because it's such a meticulous, professional approach to everything they do. And it's 42-9, and you know, it's 35-3 in the 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. You're like, yeah, okay.
At one point in the third quarter, because we can look at this offensive performance and say, gosh, is Ohio State going to be able to get where it wants to go if there's any lingering concern with Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate? And quite clearly, the passing attack would not be the same. The drop-off without them is more severe than I thought it would be, or at least it was today against Rutgers. Would that be the case next week in the Big House? I don't know. Max Clair played really well. You mentioned Brandon Innes. You know, could you get Quincy Porter back to help? Could you play someone like Philip Bell off the bench? You know, I don't know. I feel like they'd have to come up with some other answers, because the way that it worked, it was like, all right, this is not a plan that will be effective in talent-equated games. And then like that even still, because that's viewing it through the JJ and Carnell lens, that's ignoring what I thought was still yet another step forward for the rushing attack. And yes, Bo Jackson fumbled at the goal line, and maybe
what happened there? It was just in the scrum. How did the ball end up in the end zone? Did it like squirt through legs or something?
Yeah, I don't know. It looked like it was a greased pig or something.
I saw him lose the ball, but then I'm like, how does it end up in the end zone for a touchback? But whatever.
So all of that is to say, we can hyper focus on that and wonder if, you know, the lack of explosiveness that happened there with the aerial game, you know, how much of a concern that's going to be. And that would be, I think, ignoring clear signs of progress with the offensive line and with Bo Jackson overall and Isaiah West, and still finding different ways to get James Peoples involved, and also dismissive of the fact that this is the best defense in America. That's not even up for debate, and it's not even close. And that what Ohio State needs to win games moving forward is not going to require having the number one most explosive, most prolific, most efficient offense in the country. And yes, I know there are going to be better tests coming starting next week, but this defense answered another test today. Because what did we say in pregame keys, Berm? What did you say the last couple days? Like they were balanced, they were good. Kalik Manis had made some plays at quarterback. They had no solution.
They had 70 yards through the first three quarters.
39 plays. After 39 plays, I was Thanks for reminding me. They Rutgers was at 78 yards.
70.
And then Caden Curry gets a sack immediately right. after
They
that.
Had 70 yards through three quarters. They finished with 147, had 77 in the fourth.
Yeah.
And we're still outgained by 50 yards in the fourth quarter by Ohio State's backups. So, like, it is a reminder that this team is still just doing what it has to do. And I thought it was really encouraging after the Bo Jackson fumble. Instead of not putting him back out there on the next series, he gets the ball after Rutgers, for some reason, goes for it on fourth down and one from its own 29. Two plays later, Bo Jackson's get an 11-yard run where he hits a hole. Like, you see the things. Like, I think Ohio State's coaching staff has got to the point with Bo where they're like, well, yes, he might fumble sometimes, but the gap between him and everyone else is so vast that you can't not put him out there. Kudos to James Peoples, by the way, for another tremendous run. His one carry of the day, I think, was a 49-yard touchdown behind all backups, and really great vision there, which is super encouraging. I wonder, and you can tell me if – am I crazy? This is 2 weeks in a row. I think maybe one ball today thrown by Julian Sain was more than 20 yards down the field, and it was to Mylon Graham on a jump ball, basically out of bounds.
Out of bounds, yeah.
Is there a world? Now, again, we don't know what the hell is happening with Jeremiah Smith and Carnell Tate. I assume Jeremiah Smith is going to play next week.
We think we know. We can't say with any certainty.
I don't know. So let's say you have to run out there with Bryson Rogers and Mylon Graham next week, and maybe Quincy Porter's back. You get David Adolph, Brandon Ennis. The lack of attempts to get the ball down the field, is it to just – maybe disguise what these guys can do, because then, like, maybe you can goad someone into thinking you're pretty one-dimensional and boring. I'm trying to figure it out, because I don't think that Jeremiah Smith or Carnell Tate are that much better at running routes 20 yards down the field than other guys. Like, they're better at catching the ball and high pointing it and locating it and holding onto it and all that stuff. But it seems like you could still take some shots, and this offense without those two guys has just decided, we're just going to run. I think that's probably, 33 carries today? You're over 115 carries in the last three weeks for Ohio State. And it seems like they're just like, well, let's just get to Ann Arbor.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the most optimistic and charitable.
That's what I am. Homer Berm.
Way of viewing it. But that doesn't mean that it also wouldn't be accurate, because this was quite clearly a get through the game any way you can. And the scoreboard up there, it still says 42-9.
It was 14-3 at half, and I'm telling you, I think Ryan Day would have been absolutely fine walking out of here winning 14-3.
I completely agree with you. They were content with that. There was not a scenario where Rutgers was actually this would be the part where there was nothing being held back. You're seeing different blitzes, exotic blitzes from Matt Patricia today, and Rutgers had no idea. You have Caleb Downs and Arvell Reese both coming at Ethan Calligmanis. You had Caden Curry playing like a man absolutely on fire today. More great work for Kenyatta Jackson. And you're seeing that ramp up at the same time that the offense is like, well, they can do that. And the Buckeyes are going to methodically, you know, work the football down the field. They're going to lean on the run game. They're not going to take a ton of chances, as you mentioned, down the field. With Julian Sain on your team, it almost doesn't matter who is at wide receiver. Those guys are going to get – there's going to be separation. And even if there's not, the throw to Brandon Ennis down here in the southwest corner of the end zone was as good as you're ever going to see. There was only one person who could possibly catch that. So, you know, those opportunities and those shots are going to be there. But I think you're probably right. They didn't want to take any sort of risk in this game against Rutgers, and they didn't have to.
Yeah. And it's really just the margins. That's really where you see the difference when it comes to these receivers. Because if you think about this game for Julian Sain, I don't think he played poorly. He only completed 67% of his passes. I think that's a season low.
Most quarterbacks would take that.
He had the one to Max Clair that he just went through his hands. You have one drop by David Adolph.
Yeah.
You got another one to Brandon Ennis that's catchable right where it has to be. Guy makes a good play. You got another one where Julian has pressure in his face immediately and has two guys running the same route and somehow put it right on Brandon and it didn't get caught. But, like, I think that there were still a lot of encouraging things from Julian today. I think the interesting thing for me is watching how these teams the last 2 weeks have decided to increase the pressure against Ohio State, knowing that maybe the odds of getting burnt deep are a little bit less. And so knowing what Wink Martindale and Michigan will do and how much they blitz or how much they traditionally blitz, we'll see if they just decide to drop into zone next week as they've done in the last couple of years against Ohio State. But I do think it adds some interesting layers to the conversation, because it's not like these guys aren't open. It's not like Julian Sands not putting the ball right there. It's just the margins. It's the little, it's a fraction of a step slower. It's those things that take time to work on.
Maybe I'll go lean even further into your conspiracy theory here.
I love it.
Because there was one route for Max Clair and one absolutely certain for Brandon Ennis where it's a wide open touchdown and it is 20 yards down the field. Mm-hmm. And it's like, ooh, maybe I'm not supposed to do this. We're supposed to keep that play hidden. But it's open. I'll just not throw it right now. I'm going to save that for next week.
Yeah, I remember Brandon was like, hey, I'm open.
Yeah, they certainly showed that on the broadcast footage and on the replay in the press box multiple times over. None of that is to, if you feel bad about Ohio State's offensive performance, if it was disjointed, if it wasn't as explosive as you wanted, I totally understand.
It's 450 yards, and you think that it could be a whole lot better, and it can be.
Yeah, and that's fine. I'm not trying to make anyone feel better about it or say that Ohio State's going to be just fine, even if Jeremiah or Carnell don't come back. They certainly need those two to reach their full potential. That's not even up for debate. And I think in real time, just watching it, it's like that was a little bit frustrating part to watch because I think very highly of Mylon Graham. You predicted a huge day for Bryson Rogers, and it's like, well, we didn't even get to see them. And I don't know that there was a – Ryan Day didn't really give a clear explanation for why that was. And instead it became the – oops, all tight ends offense, which we've also seen before. And it worked. I mean,
you won by 33.
Again, they won 42-9. So
it covered the spread. It was a 31.5 point spread against a 5-5 team in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And Ohio State covered with tight ends. And that's it.
And the run game. And
the backup quarterback playing a quarter and a half. So, like, it's this team is so good that they can do these things that I think the fan base is like, what? Why do we have to do it this way? When you've got these guys, like when you recruit all these receivers and then you're like, well, you know what we're not going to do today? Play them. Like, okay. Like 33-point win against a pretty well-coached Rutgers team who, you know, has been efficient offensively this year. And they had 70 yards through three quarters. So senior day, I mean.
I can't believe right here it's senior day. Caden Curry scored right here, where you're standing.
He 100% scored. I was by this goalpost, and he 100% scored. And I can't believe they didn't. Like, every turnover is reviewed. So I think all they did was review the fumble and not where he landed. Because he landed on top of the guy and rolled into the end zone from where I saw it.
It was a touchdown.
He was not happy about it. But in typical Caden Curry fashion, he said something else is coming down the road. Something else is bigger.
I think that you can see that later on the notebook, in case anyone hasn't figured out this year. We record them out of order. Then it turned into a real adventure after that for Ohio State. They did not score on first and goal from the one with C.J. Donaldson, who made his return. On that play, Luke Montgomery's helmet pops off. They put in Ethan Onyanwa, who promptly draws a holding penalty on second down.
On a play that they lost 3 yards on somehow.
And then you go back and you are suddenly facing third and goal from the 11. And then Julian Sands is like, oh, that's all right. Max Clair is going to be right over there and I'll throw it to him and this game will be over. And sometimes they make it look so easy. Again, I'm not trying to nitpick it. I'm not upset about anything that Ohio State did. I'm not thinking that it means anything for next Saturday, to be 100% honest with you. It's just like it was kind of confounding to watch.
It's again, I keep using the word reminder, but I go back to the Buckeyes getting the ball on the 2 yard line, up 7-3. They run it twice in a row, and you're like, come on. And then it's just a little dunk over the middle to David Adolph, who's wide open. And then you've got Max Clair, who's wide open. And then you throw it to Brandon Ennis, who's wide open. And you're like, well, we're going to run a screen, which is wide open. Like, they can do that all the time.
Yeah.
And so, like, Ryan Day, and I guess what I'm hoping as we head into Ann Arbor next week is that this is a program that understands – yes, you have to have balance. Yes, you have to do all these things if you want to be a historically great team and go through the playoff like you did a year ago, because you're going to run into different mismatches and different matchups and styles make fights and all that crap. But sometimes, man, you just use your best players. And the best players on Ohio State's team today was still number 10 and then number 25. And then you figure out the rest. So,
well, then they have 0 and 8 and 92 and 2 and 97.
Well, I meant offensively, obviously. So it's just one of, I don't know. Oh, can't be sure. It's amazing the season is over at Ohio Stadium.
Yeah.
But let's keep our fingers crossed for that we don't have to come back here for a game. Like, the next time we should be in here is in January.
A, re- a real spring game, though, for a game.
No, I'm saying, national championship celebration in January. And all that comes down to next week. And I thought Ryan Day actually, in his post-game press conference, was less, like, eager to turn the page to Michigan than he has in years past. And again, this will be the thing that gets hyper-criticized or hyper-critiqued for Ryan Day this week, is he is clearly trying to lean into this idea of, like, this is our routine.
Yep.
This is what works for us. We don't need – he knows how important this game is. Trust me, everyone, he does. He does not need to stand at the podium and pound the table and say, well, it's on to that team up north. That's all we're thinking about. He called them the Wolverines in his press conference. I've never heard that. I've never heard that word uttered around here.
I haven't either.
He obviously definitely avoided using the M word, but – like he did, he called them the Wolverines. He said, you know, we got to just get to our normal routine and not turn it into something that it isn't, which is do your job, next guy up, do your job. And that approach has worked very, very well for this program since December 21st, a year ago. I guess we'll find out how well it works next Saturday in Ann Arbor when it's
game. To that end, like Ohio State has already had the appearance from the band at practice. They did that during the second off week. Next week, they are going to have a normal Tuesday press conference. Sometimes they get all of that out of the way on Monday, and it's no distractions and lockdown for the entire week. It's not what Ryan Day is doing next week. Normal Tuesday with him. Wednesday night lightning round. We're going to be in the facility on Wednesday evening.
Talking to
the captains. It's never happened in the
14 years
that I've been covering the team. This is going to be the first. So that is what you mean by keeping the routine, and that includes media obligations and everything else. So that's how he's trying to treat next week. Unfortunately for him, with two media availabilities, that means he's going to face 55 more questions about Jeremiah and Carnell.
Understandably.
I get it. Yeah, I'm not dismissing that at all, and I'm not dismissing the interest from the fans. It is the most important thing that is happening to this team. To that end, I just want to ask if you saw anything on the sideline, any conversations, I saw JJ get on the bike for a little bit in the second half.
I mean, JJ and Carnell were both there. They're both engaged. They're both around. I mean, that's all you can hope for. They don't look to be moving too gingerly, but obviously walking is in tennis shoes is a whole lot different than running in cleats and getting hit while you're doing it. So, no, I mean, there was nothing that you look at and say, well, that's a horrible sign. Like, everything you see is encouraging, but it doesn't really matter. I think that with this team, the one thing that I really, like, if I'm walking away from today thinking about, it's Ryan Day in the fourth quarter. Like, he was pissed off. he was yelling at officials, yelling at Lincoln Keenholz, yelling at Julian Sain, yelling at James Peoples. Like, it's 35-3 at that point, or 28-3. Buckeyes are just getting ready to score the touchdown to make it 35-3, and he was livid. And, like, whatever amount of time or effort he puts into poo-pooing the changes that he's made as the head coach, I'm telling you, when you watch him now on the sideline, he is in an official's ear the whole time. It's just so different. And even like 6 minutes to go in the game, Ohio State gets the ball back. He thought that a Rutgers defensive player was lined up in the neutral zone and is like grabbing the official. Look at it. Like, I'm like, hey, man, the routine is working for him.
Yeah.
So it's his program. Well, I guess we're going to find out if the routine works for everyone else.
Next week, it's here. It's already here. It's not next week. It's now. The game has arrived. Game number 12 is on the way. Buckeyes get win number 11, 42-9 over Rutgers. Everything is in front of them. Ryan Day said it. Caden Curry echoed it. It's time to go play for some hardware. It's gold pants. It's the chance to get to Indianapolis. It's everything. We're done with if all of this has been the prelude or the preseason or whatever we want to call it, training camp, scrimmages, spring games, that's done now. It is time for the game. Big Ten championship opportunity would wait after that, and then it's the college football playoff. And I assume we will not be back in this building. That's already the first bold prediction for next week, but we'll cover all of that when we get back to work. We'll have the notebook later on 97.1 The Fan, 10TV, 10TV Plus. We will have Monday trying to work out some logistics there with Zach Bourne. Congratulations to the Bourne family. We'll get to some of that details as the week goes on as well. But that's it from here. That's the last time in this building for the seniors. Again, it's a bold prediction, but it's going to be true, I promise you. And the last snap judgments from a regular season home game, I can promise you that. It's Jeremy Birmingham. I'm Austin Ward. It's a wrap. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Miami. Miami, July 5th and July 31st. Ice Cube's Big 3 is back at the Amerant Bank Arena, featuring big stars like Dwight Howard, Joe Johnson, Lance Stephenson, and more. And featuring your home team, the Miami 305, led by Michael Beasley. Grab your tickets now at big3.com/tickets or Ticketmaster. Presented by iHeart.